Step right up, folks. Welcome to the greatest show on earth. That's right. Gather around as we introduce the dazzling, the bewildering, the did he really just say that and was that English spectacle known as the ASMFC Striped Bass Management Board. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this board has been performing the same high wire acts for years now, teetering between indecision and delay with a stunning lack of balance. Watch in amazement as they juggle scientific data with one hand and their own selfish personal agendas in the other. And who could forget their signature trick, wait and see? That's right, folks. They'll keep you waiting, hoping for a new wave of data that might magically fix a collapsing fishery. To your right, watch New Jersey try to handle the task of printing commercial tags while balancing on an elephant in the room. Poor recruitment. And to your left, the rare striped bass that only has value on a table. That's right, sit back, grab your popcorn, and prepare for a show of inaction so unbelievable, you'll be left wondering, how do these people still have a position of power, and why am I still on this meeting after 6 hours? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Striped Bass Circus. Tony Friedrich, how are you this evening, my friends?
Oh, you just made me mess up my juggling routine. Do we need to start the podcast over?
Well, I squeezed the flower that's on my suit and it shot water on my podcast microphone. So we're in a tough state.
The rabbit that just came out of my hat just shit on my floor, Cody.
Yep, that sounds about right. Well, if anyone is curious why we sound like we're in another dimension right now, it is 7:40 p.m. and we have been on a striped bass meeting since 1:30 p.m. And if anyone here is as good at math as most of our striped bass management board statisticians, that is greater than 5 hours on the total meeting. Six now with our investment plus wherever this podcast is going to go. So thank you all for listening. This is our rapid reaction. We're going to get into what the heck just happened on all that. There were, at the start of that meeting, Tony, I believe there was 200 and something people. I don't know if it cracked 250. By the end of it, there were about 100 and something, I think.
And I think 50 of those people passed out.
One or two of them are drooling on their microphone. But I will say this, notable stuff happened.
Thanks for everyone who attended.
Yes.
That would be first of all, like, there's not many of these hearings that you see 200 people that are going to attend it during the middle of the day when they have work and kids. I mean, look, man, you know, we got some health issues, you know, nobody get worried. It's nothing serious, but we got health issues in my house. And I was driving 80 miles an hour down country roads while listening to this thing to try to get back in time and hopefully make a comment. I had people texting me being like, look, man, you know, I got to pick up my kid. I got to get back to work. I have to get on a conference call. But, you know, the fact that people are there for as long as they were, like, what a good community, man. And the other thing that I'll say, you know, just about attendance and participation for all those people who signed our letter. And for all the brands that signed on, thank you to all the brands. Thank you to all the people who signed on. And under the circumstances, I want y'all to know that your voice was heard in this meeting. You know, I don't want to do a spoiler. And the other kind of blanket statement that I'm going to make is, you know, Katie Drew, Dr. Drew, the more famous Dr. Drew, Dr. Katie Drew, our stock assessment scientist, is really one of the most revered stock assessment scientists in the country. And she does a great job. And Emily, the fisheries management plan coordinator for striped bass, did a great job. I think Tony Kearns, who popped in there and kind of redirected the board, made very useful comments. I think she did a good job. I think all the people who work, who are employed by ASMFC, are doing their job. And I think people need to understand that and wrap their head around it. And now, you know, there's a but coming, right? So ASMFC employees are sheltered under a umbrella of protection. And there are multiple commissioners who won the Mike Honcho Award today. All of that said, we're laying the groundwork to really put the lumber to the clowns. Hence our intro. So y'all are gonna own what you said, and you're gonna own wasting our time, and you're gonna own exhausting this community.
You know, Tony, I think one of the tough parts about how today played out is if you're new to the game or you're just a stakeholder who's trying to get up to speed, you're a rec angler, you participate in this process, and maybe you're not even under the umbrella of an organization, you're not part of our association or another group, but you're just a stakeholder who wants to participate in this. How today played out, it's very justifiable if someone left it early after a couple hours, or left the entire meeting really feeling like, how am I represented here, or how is my voice represented? Because how this meeting played out is there were presentations from the start from the TC. They talked about considerations from a work group for no targeting, talked about the stock assessment and projections. And then it goes into questions about those presentations. And during this question process, to be very clear, you are not supposed to make a comment about management actions or where the fishery is, you know, what you want to see from the fishery. This is not a comment section. This is intended for, hey, on slide 38, I see that you used this F rate. Why are you using this F rate here as opposed to whatever? It's for questions about that. And if you are someone with a sense of integrity or just trying to follow the rules, like say us three and anyone else that was sitting on those hundreds of other people, you saved your comment for the comment period later in that. And this process didn't end up rewarding people who played by the rules, because there was a subset of a half dozen people who decided to submit their comment at that point in time, of which, you know, moderation basically said, like, I don't hear a question in there. Was that a question? But you, once it's said, right? They get away with it. And those people got their opinion in early. And then you proceed down a line of what happened, which we're going to get into one second, Tony, of a pretty critical motion and a couple of substitute motions. And throughout that process, less than a dozen public comments were heard. I mean, when we got to the substitute process, a very, very critical substitute that was basically going to drive, will any action for this fishery be taken in 2025? Or are they going to get to kick the can down at least another year and 3 months at minimum? And on that substitute, three public comments were heard. And so you sit there leaving going, how the heck am I represented here? Now, thankfully, I will say, of those three public comments, Peter Jenkins from the Saltwater Edge had a great comment. Representatives from House Fly Fishing, another fantastic comment. But the system's really tough, because you're sitting there for hours while people essentially play merry-go-rounds with a lot of stuff that they're well aware is going to fall flat if they try to attempt it. It's information that they're well aware of the answer to their question or to the result of where they're going with things, but they're playing games throughout that process. And so you go through hours of it and you go, all right, I got something to say. And you never get your chance to say what you want to say. And so to bundle it up, I guess, in a positive aspect real quick until we take a deep dive into there, a big shout out to all the brands and to all the individuals who signed our letter. Because we're going to talk about which board members did speak on behalf of the resource. And in my opinion, they are speaking on behalf of those 1,600 people that signed our letter. Because you made your voice heard. You did it in an expedient timeline. And we got a massive 30-page letter with all of your names submitted in the supplemental materials for these board members. And so when they are acting on behalf of the resource, the people who are going to win Tony's magical awards of courage for this meeting, they were speaking on your behalf. So a shout out to all those brands and all those anglers who signed on. But Tony, it's really tough when you sit for a long time and you're just hoping at minimum you're going to get 2 minutes to say. And we've been in a lot of fisheries meetings where sometimes the time is cut so short that you only get 1 minute to say what you want to say. And that's really tough to squeeze it into 1 minute. But today, not everyone is going to comment, but there were hundreds of people on there. And I think it's fair to say dozens, if not 100 people, lost their opportunity to comment. So I don't know if we want to get into, maybe we should off the jump. Tony, why don't you read your comment you had prepared? I'll read mine, and then maybe we introduce a little special guest here for the rest of this podcast.
Okay. So this was, I obviously, you know, I'm talking for the Guides Association. I'm not talking for myself. And, you know, we had time to prepare with the motion. And we basically just did our best. So here was what, if we given an opportunity, here was what I was going to read. My name is Tony Friedrich, and I'm the president of ASGA. I live in one of the most iconic striped bass areas in the country. We don't fish for stripers anymore. I haven't seen one school of small breaking fish this year. We'd regularly drive past a dozen schools of small fish on any given day in the fall. We have bait. Our water is clean. We don't have dead zones in my area. And this reality is coming to the coast like a freight train. You may not realize it or want to accept it, but unfortunately, you will see it firsthand in the next few years. The issue with striped bass started when we went to two fish at 28 inches. Then it got worse in 2012 when the board hedged reductions that should have been over 35% down to 25 and 20.5% for the ocean and bay respectively due to the abundant 2011 year class. That did not work out. Recently, the newly initiated slot put the 2015 year class in the crosshairs and resulted in over a 32% increase in harvest for 2022 and a 17% increase in harvest for 2023. This happened in conjunction with over a 10% decline in post-release mortality. How could this happen? How can a 3-inch slot result in 10% less release mortality? You would think a lot of other fish are being thrown over the side. Well, this happened because fewer people are fishing due to the lack of fish. Managers always point out that effort is the hardest thing to predict. It isn't that hard. The more fish in the water, the more trips taken, more tackle purchased, more guides booked. When the population declines, flip the coin. It's less of everything. Many commissioners have commented on how do you control recreational effort? Well, congrats. You did it. You broke the code, you geniuses. You left us with no fish, and effort is collapsing along with the numbers of fish and the associated economy. Why are some people's jobs more important than ours? In light of the problems with the fisheries effort survey, we all know that the impact of commercial fishing for striped bass is far more significant than previously thought. Yet the recreational sector has faced the bulk of the needed reductions. How can anyone trained in fishery science look at the Chesapeake Young of the Year and pretend that an untouched almost 3 million pound bay quota still makes sense? Reductions are desperately needed, and they have to be made from harvest and not quota, or it's just paper. Does it make sense to intercept females on the way to spawn with anchored gill nets, considering the declining numbers and the terrible Young of the Year? When we speak to managers from around the country, managers who don't have anything to do with striped bass, and we tell them about gill nets targeting females heading into spawn, they laugh because they think we're joking. And then they see the grim look on our face and understand that we aren't. How can New Jersey push for no targeting closures while they can kill two fish with their bonus tag system, the only state that's left? Does anyone listening to this really believe that only 1,100 fish from 24 to 28 inches from May 15th to December were harvested in 2018 by the entire state of New Jersey? Or how about 9,700 in 2023? That's a whopping 45 fish a day from May to December. Hey, if New Jersey's embracing what's best for the fish, then lead the way. Lead the way and end your bonus tag. Until that time, you have no moral ground to stand on. It is up to this board to stop playing the hell. Oh, sorry about that, man. My computer just blinked out. So edit that at 20 minutes. It is up to this board to stop playing a shell game with paper reductions and using unaccountable, unenforceable, and unquantifiable regulatory options based on wild assumptions that are shaky at best. And yes, I'm talking about no targeting closures. While other sectors get free pass after free pass after free pass, you do not manage climate change. You do not manage zooplankton. You manage striped bass, at least for the time being. This is your last chance to do the right thing before the inevitable occurs.
I do like that you got to add some dramatic effect to the timing there, because you weren't held to like a minute to freestyle everything you can.
Oh, I have a flair for theater. Yeah. You know that, Cody.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if you were on the time clock, you would have been like, hey, I'm Tony. So anyways, da, da, da. All right. I'm gonna go real quick. Then we're going to jump into what happened. All right. Here's my comment. Good afternoon, board. My name is Captain Cody Rubner. I'm a guide and the communications director for the American Saltwater Guides Association. Fostering and moderating dynamic conversations about fisheries management is a big part of my role. This means I have direct access to the pulse of the conversations about this fishery. If I tasked you with finding conversation online that's largely thoughtful, appreciative, and supportive of how this board operates, you'd need much longer than these meetings typically take. The data we currently have paints a clear picture of the challenges facing striped bass, and the community is tired of delays and excuses. This board is not operating how it's intended. Let's take verbiage from the ASMFC 5-year strategic plan. The first sentence of this document references that each state has fundamental responsibility to safeguard the public trust with respect to its natural resources. While a few states have done this, the majority have not. The community at large does not have faith in this board. They believe your authority is used to protect certain stakeholder groups while ignoring your true duty. They can't understand why they get one fish in a narrow slot while other operations are allowed to kill big fish, and some operations are even allowed to target fish entering spawning grounds with gill nets. This ASMFC document also continues, commissioners and member states have adopted the following values to guide their operations. Under these values, I see, quote unquote, seeking solutions that lead to long-term ecological and socioeconomic sustainability. Under goals, the first goal focuses, commission members will advocate decisions to achieve the long-term benefits of conservation. Most importantly, I see stated that inherent in this is the recognition that healthy and vibrant resources benefit all stakeholders. Let that one sink in. These are your own words. This is supposedly your creed. Adhere to it. There's no more time for delaying the inevitable. The 6 straight years of poor spawns have happened. Kicking the can for one more year to hammer on one of the last above average year classes will have us destined to repeat history. Fulfill your duty to rebuilding this resource. And what's tough is a lot of people really care about this, and a lot of people have very different opinions on where all of this should go, and all of those opinions are valid. But when you don't get the opportunity to share your opinion, share your voice, and participate in the public process as it's designed, it's really difficult. So our preparation aside, that was our thesis. That was our intention. That was our mindset going into this meeting. And this meeting kicks off. And we are joined today by a good friend, an avid angler, a conservationist, a photographer. I don't know what he'd be in the circus. He's probably the donkey trainer, I think. He'd probably have like a whip and a weird little suit and hang out with the donkey in the corner of the circus tent. But
I was going to say the bearded lady, but please continue.
We could honestly combine the two of them. But we're joined by Nick Jones, who he's been sitting in on the ASMFC meetings throughout this week, but this was his first, what I would say, he's been training, he's been running, he's been doing a couple miles, he's been working out at the gym, and he just got thrown into the all-out marathon today. So, Nick, welcome to the Guidepost. We had you on a while back. I don't remember what episode that was, but welcome back again. Just high-level reaction, what the hell did you think of how today went down?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me. Yeah, today was, I didn't know what to expect going into it, honestly, but my goodness, by the end of it, it was a whirlwind. My head was spinning. You know, my perspective on all this was, you know, I have a background in marine science, so I'm not completely unequipped to understand a lot of what happens in a fisheries meeting like this. However, what I think I was most unprepared for was a lot of the theater that goes into something like this. And that's what confused me enough to the point where I was having to text to ask certain questions. Yeah, it was a lot to digest, and it was good to be a part of, but there are certain takeaways that kind of bothered me as a person who was hoping to participate in the meeting, right? At least as a little reward for sitting through 5.5 hours of either really weird banter that didn't have anything to do with what they were presenting on at the time. And the time really never came, but it was a good exercise to sit through the whole thing, and I'm happy to have witnessed it.
Well, you must be a podcast pro, because you teed it up perfectly for a nice little transition here, which is a focus on the theater. So, Tony, let's get into what the hell went down. Let's hit it at a high level. At least maybe we work through these motions real quick and give people the baseline of the framework for the discussion. And then we'll go into a little commentary after that. But we have all these presentations to start laying the scene. This is the science. This is the data. This is the work the TC has done to prepare before. Additionally, board members have all the supplemental materials that they received that included all the public comments and submissions before that time. We get into public comment, and I think we might have had maybe one. I can't remember. There was maybe one or two points of discussion before we get a motion from Nicola Meserve. So I'm going to read that motion. This motion is key because this is the anchor, and all these meetings run through Robert's rules, which if you're not aware of this parliamentary procedure, it can be both confusing. And even if you are aware of it, it's still a pain in the ass. But this motion is the anchor for the entire meeting. And so we have a motion. There will be a couple substitutes after it. We'll explain what that means. But this motion is our anchor. So from Nicola Meserve, move to schedule a special striped bass management board meeting in December of 2024, this year, to consider board action in response to the 2024 stock assessment update. The board will consider action to revise 2025 recreational seasons and or size limits and 2025 commercial quotas. So again, to jump in real quick, all of this action, this meeting is going to go in December. All of this action will be for the 2025 season, commercial and rec, to achieve a 50% probability of rebuilding by 2029 under the, quote, low 2024 removals with F increase in 2025 only projection. So we'll tap in real quick on what that last part means. But that is the baseline that this motion put forward by Ms. Meserve was to force this board to meet again in less than 2 months and make changes for this fishery for 2025. So why don't we real quick, Tony, this motion goes up. What's your first reaction to this motion?
Nicola Meserve took over for Mike Armstrong. Okay. And so Massachusetts has a legacy of conservation. And I think Nicola's upholding that legacy. Was it the motion that I would fully embrace and say this is going to fix everything? No. But it was a motion that could pass, and it ultimately did. And I'm not. This whole thing is just so frustrating. I give kudos to Nicola and MassDMF, because they got it through, and at certain points it didn't even seem like that was a possibility. So, basically what's going on, Cody, I mean, you wrap this up in like 2 seconds. Is that the problems from the technical committee and the SAS were that when they did the slot limit, harvest went through the roof, up 32% in 22, up 17% in 23, because those 15s were in the meat grinder.
Something that we commented on back in the day was telling people that jumping to that slot limit, there was intention behind that. And jumping to that slot limit, their intention was, look at the lay of the land right now on this conveyor belt of all the year classes. And they saw a wide open pasture with the 15s.
We are in this mess right now, and we no longer have a robust 2015 year class because harvest went through the roof. But as those 15s matriculated through the slot limit, they're not going to be in the slot limit next year. And they were phasing out in 2024. They were aging out, getting too big for the slot. So I got to tell you, we're not hypocrites. We have integrity. And they don't have the data for 2024, all of it. They don't have wave four, which is what they need, because we're still in 2024. So they don't know what the reduction is going to be. So Nicola's motion was to buy a little bit of time for the TC and the SAS to be able to see that wave four data and come up with reasonable expectations of how we reach that 2029 deadline. So that is not Nicola's fault. That is not Katie Drew's fault. That's nobody's fault that we don't have that data. And I think it was just so much less than what we wanted. And I hate it. I don't want to have like Stockholm syndrome now, where like you start to love your kidnappers, you know, like I don't want that. But I think it was the best that they could do. And we can, at the end of this, we'll get into what they tasked the technical committee to review. And then we can start laying the groundwork for this meeting that we don't know the date for yet in December.
And that lack of data and the fact that the data coming out of the swap to this slot limit has only been around for 1 year was what went into that last sentence, which was basically there were a handful of options where the TC tried to lay out what could happen based off of how your F rate changes next year and in coming years, but they have to make projections for that because of that lack of data. And so that was the last part of the motion that I wanted to add some clarity to that Tony just touched on there. So you have this motion, this is your baseline. And while not the dream scenario and like the holy crap, they came to bat and this is, you know, a Disney movie ending, you have a baseline of something that we can operate off of. It's going to take a little time. We're going to have to wait till December. Advocacy going to be needed yet again in the coming weeks. But we have a baseline and immediately it goes under attack. So we get a motion from Mr. Luisi, a fan favorite and Stripe Ass regular of the advocacy community. Here's the motion substitute. And so now the tough part about how this hijacks the communication process is this substitution is proposed by another board member, Mr. Luisi in this case. They propose this substitution, and then all debate goes into now if this substitution should debate or should replace the original motion. So he moves to substitute to initiate an addendum to address reducing total removers in the coastwide striped bass fishery using the TC's most likely projection scenario and a 50% probability of achieving the spawning stock biomass by 2029. The intent of this addendum is to provide the board with coastwide and regional alternatives for recreational commercial fishery for implementation on January 1, 2026. Okay, now we've got a plot twist. Implementation by 2026, if you read that last sentence and leave it alone, that sentence says, we ain't doing shit for 2025. And we all know how that's going to go. We have 6 poor year spawn year classes in a row. The fishery is in the state that it is. And this is the can kick that we expected, which is one more year to hammer on the last good year class that's going to be entering in that slot, which is the 2018s, which is still not an excellent class, but it's the last above average.
Yeah. And, you know, there was another motion in there from Pat Gear also that was basically like initiate an addendum. And that would also, you know, serve the purpose of delay. And our concern, so when members of the board asked Virginia and Maryland when they could implement changes to the commercial quota, the answer was yesterday. Maryland DNR said they're already in the process of, they've already ordered the tags and they're already getting ready to go out. And these are plastic tags with little numbers printed on them. So it's not like these things are terribly expensive. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole yet. I will. But if they initiated an addendum in 2025, that addendum would have to be done by the August meeting, which is not possible, but that addendum would have to be done by the August meeting, or the commercial sector in the Bay wouldn't take a reduction until 2027, which is the benchmark stock assessment year, which means that they wouldn't take a reduction in 2027 because they'd say, let's wait until the benchmark comes out.
There's always a reason to wait, Tony. And
you push this thing like,
and this is the cycle that we continue to get caught in, Tony, which is, I mean, you brought up the tags and let's just jump into it. That was used last year. Oh, now yeah. It's being used again. This is the same talking point, which is this meeting happens at the end of the year and some board members want to see changes for the betterment of the resource. And they go, too late, can't print them anymore. But Nicola, I think, rightly called out that those same board members have known. They know the data.
Here's the funniest thing, Cody. They're like, oh, we took a 7% reduction. The Robert T. Brown, the chairman, the head of the Maryland Watermen's Association. You didn't take a 7% reduction. You haven't hit your quota. You hit 84% of your quota last year. So you didn't take a 7% reduction and you're not going out of business. The other non-Mike Honcho award goes to Steve Train from Maine, who said, fish are food and you're playing with them. Okay, newsflash, Commissioner Train. 90% of striped bass have been thrown back by the anglers for 40 years, independent of what the slot limit was, what the size limit was, what the creel was. People want to throw them back. And guess what? Guess what? Our fish are more valuable than the ones on the table because our economy is 98-95% of this fishery. Your economy isn't a bug on the windshield. And I bring that up because our next to favorite guy next to Luisi, John Clark, said that he wanted to put socioeconomic data in it. Oh, sometimes you get what you ask for, Mr. Clark, Commissioner Clark, because your fishery isn't worth nothing compared to ours. So let's pile in some socioeconomic data. We recycle our fish and they're worth more. Oh, and genius. The other genius thing that he said, a dead fish right now is worth more than a dead fish 4 years from now. Listen up. Scream from the steeples that you don't know nor shinola about economics. You think a 3-inch Christmas tree is worth a 10-foot Christmas tree? I would direct you to all the studies that NOAA has done on how the value of fish increases, catch and release, when the size increases. Our fish are worth more than yours. And like I said, we recycle them and hopefully catch them more than once.
Well, you brought up what I was about to say. That was one of the comments that shook me. Going through these meetings, you kind of get lulled into the doldrums of the technical speak and the back and forth on stuff that doesn't matter. But when he said that, I believe the direct quote was a striped bass is worth more now than it is in 4 years. I couldn't believe I heard that in a striped bass meeting about the future of this fishery, right? Like the whole point of gathering these minds together to direct policy is so that there are tons of fish. And it was weird to hear the attitude that, you know, it was almost like saying the future is not as important as us having it right now.
And here's the translation, Nick. It's not an economics conversation. It's not, because we're being logical. The three of us are talking about the economics of that fish. That's not what he meant by that. He meant by your fishery in the future is not as valuable as my money in my pocket right now. It was only about him and his operation, just to clarify, and the other voices that he represents. That is what it meant. It meant, let's not take the path that's the most thoughtful. Let's take the least thoughtful path that is the most convenient for me. And that is what that conversation was based upon. I know I had texts from a close friend of many of ours who listeners will hear from more, who's a natural resources economist, PhD, professor, brilliant dude. And he was like a caged lion, you know, like a let me at him. Like the amount of legitimate natural resource economics truth bombs that were about to be dropped on that conversation had that gentleman had the opportunity to. And that's one of the irritating parts of this process, right? Is this isn't a group of guys in one room where you can participate and you can be like, hey, that's not true. It can be really aggravating to be an advocate who's trying to be thoughtful, and you're stuck on the sidelines and you watch someone get to babble with legitimate, dishonest, and inaccurate information, have the mic. And now that's part of the process, is that we give everyone their chance. We give everyone their chance on the microphone. That is, that has always been ASGA's core tenet. We have done a handful of years ago, I forget which call to action it was, but there was participation, submit a public comment, tag CC comments at Saltwater Guides Association, and you'll be entered to win. And you didn't even have to agree with us. You could submit all the bogus stuff that we completely and totally disagree with morally. And we did a random drawing. And if one of those emails won, we would have given them, you know, some stuff. And I don't remember who did and who didn't win and what they commented on. But that has been ASGA's core tenet, is this is a public process and we believe in the process inherently. But that being said, it can be very, very tough to watch bad actors have their moment on the mic if you don't get your chance on the mic.
The other thing that Steve Train said was that with the slot limit, catch and release has gone out of control to mortality. And I've been listening to these meetings for decades, and very rarely have I been more embarrassed for an individual, because the information is in the stock assessment that was provided to these commissioners weeks ago. And if you're going to make a statement like that, then it's pretty clear that you did not do your job as a commissioner, because it's right here on page like 80 that recreational release mortality dropped by over 10% with a 3-inch slot. And the only way that that, because all they do is look at the NOAA FES, they get the effort, they see how many trips were taken, then they think they know what the effort is, and they think they know how many fish were released, and they just multiply that by 0.09. This is not one of the more complicated math problems that we're dealing with. So in order for that to fall by 10%, you have a drastic reduction in people fishing. Drastic.
So we survive substitute motion number one. We get to substitute motion number two. I'm going to read it real quick. This is from Mr. Gear. Move to substitute to schedule a special striped bass. So same start, schedule a meeting for December. Okay. The board may, in bold, consider action to revise the 2025 recreational seasons and or size limits. And 2026 in bold, commercial measures via board action. The board could also consider recreational commercial measures with an addendum for 2026 and beyond to achieve a 50% probability. So a very similar attack, Tony, to the previous, with emphasis here in a couple bold list items and specific words, which is may consider action at December. So an ability to get out of the necessary changes in December if they decide they don't want to. And also very specifically focus those actions, if they are made in December, on the recreational sector and not on the commercial sector. And if changes were to be made on the commercial sector via board action, it was for an entire year later. And then the board could also consider maybe just bundling it all up and going into the addendum process, which we already talked about how that would change the timeline. But again, pushing out to 2026 intended implementation of that addendum, even if possible. So a very similar attack, but very pointed, which is basically, yeah, I want to change out this original motion. I don't want to make any actions in December. And if we're going to make actions in December, let's make them on recreational. Let's leave commercial alone. Tony, initial gut reaction.
So I think it would really help the audience. You know, we did this in the Q&A, Cody. And, you know, somebody asked, like, you know, are they on the take, or is it the lobbyists that are giving them money? And, you know, we kind of drilled down real deep and explained that it's like a state by state issue. So I will tell you that there was a comment made when you go back to the tag issue, and when do they issue tags, and what does that process look like for Chesapeake Bay states? And someone mentioned that it was really difficult for them because their staff was down 33%. So make no mistake, Virginia is now the worst place to work in the country, in saltwater, if you want to get a job in fisheries. And it's because of the current administration in Virginia. It's because of the current governor. And I'm not talking politics. Don't paint me into that corner. I'm talking what that administration is pushing at in Virginia's fishery agency, you know, VMRC. So I feel for them. I feel for the people that are the state employees and working under these conditions. And they're going to get a little bit of a pass for me because their motions and their intentions are probably not their own. And, you know, if everyone remembers, like, the Guides Association was thrilled a couple of years ago because we broke the Chesapeake Bay voting block, because it used to just be all rolled up into one. DC, PRFC, Maryland, Virginia would just boom. They just all vote together. So all the other states that wanted conservation, they knew, oh, in Delaware, but I mean, whatever, they're not part of the Bay, but they knew you were four votes down. Four votes down before you even started. And I would like to just tell the people listening that if somebody can explain to me why the Potomac River has three votes, while the state of Massachusetts has one, boy, was this system set up crooked as F from the get-go. You tell me why one river has three votes. Oh, and by the way, Maryland owns the Potomac waters up to mean low tide on the Virginia side. So tell me why PRFC has a quota the size of the state of Massachusetts. Tell me why that little ass river has three votes, right? Makes no sense. No sense whatsoever. Maryland, PRFC, DC.
This one we survived. And when I say survive, we survived this one on a very, very close margin. We survived this one on a tie, which is horrifying to think that we were maybe one vote off from seeing any sort of potential for progress derailing. And then we get one more. Technically, it's not a substitute. It's a motion to amend, and it's to amend that original motion from Ms. Meserve. This motion is from Mr. Clark, and they want to change. It was seconded by Mr. Sikorsky to change commercial quotas to commercial measures. And how this one fell through was basically that they were hoping to not only, you know, maybe lean into some other changes that could be made in commercial and not to solely focus on the quota, but that fell flat. So we survived the gauntlet of fire and circus and charades and all the things that came up. At this point, Nick is about 12 encyclopedias deep on Robert's rules, trying to figure out what we're voting on at this point. I joke, but we have the original motion, and it comes back around, Tony, to, okay, what is the board going to task the TC with? So now you have a meeting coming up to this in December, and the TC is saying, okay, we're supposed to help you, the technical committee, when I keep saying TC, we're supposed to help you prepare for that meeting in December. What do we need to help you prepare with? And so I'm going to read real quick. Potential TC tasking. And so these are the four things that after some debates end up being left on for consideration, all four of them. And a lot of people who have listened this far are going to want to know, okay, well, what is ASGA's position? Where are we going with this? ASGA's positions are exactly what was in our letter. None of those have changed. The TC is going to come back with four different points, bullet points I'm going to read in a second. ASGA is going to look at those recommendations and those options from the TC and throttle down on whatever of them align with exactly what we called for in our meeting, which is a prioritization of the long-term health of this resource. And so real quick, I'm going to read them. We'll put them in a blog. So if you want to read these, I know they're kind of hard to digest by audio, but potential TC tasking update, the low 2024 removals with F increase in 2025 only projection with a realized 2024 wave four MRIP data, and determine the reduction in removals in 2025 needed to achieve a 50% probability of being above the SSB target by 2029. Okay. A lot of words, a lot of numbers. I think Nick fell asleep while I was reading that one. I think he's gassed out now at seven hours and change. But basically what this means is going to be an update for those projections. We're adding that final chunk of 2024 data, and the board wants to see what reduction in removals are necessary to still have a 50% chance of rebuilding by 2029, which is that rebuilding timeline. So that's chunk number one. Number two, develop a range of ocean and Chesapeake Bay recreational no harvest seasonal closure options at the regional level to achieve the reduction. Okay. The slot's already shrunk. The slot is basically a millimeter at this point. We've already heard a lot of complaints from all different sectors and sides and participants of anyone that has any hope of harvesting a fish. They're going to develop a range of ocean and bay no harvest seasonal closures. So these are not no targeting, and the difference between the two, again, we talked about this in the last lengthy podcast. No harvest means you can go out fishing, no fishery to be kept, recreational or commercial. No targeting means you cannot go out fishing for those. And we have a lengthy opinion on those. We do not support no targeting, though the second bullet point here does say include the equivalent no targeting closure length for each of these options. ASGA is never going to support those. They're unenforceable, but we will support harvest season closures and hope to see them, like this says, at a regional level, equitable because the seasons and the experience for striper anglers from Maine to Virginia is very different. Bullet point number three, develop an ocean slot limit option below the current 28-inch minimum, and that would aim to put a slot lower to protect those 2018s who are entering that year class. And the final one is, for comparison only, conduct an alternative low 2024 removals with F increase in 2025 only projection, where age one recruitment is sampled from 2020 to 2024 only, and determine the reduction in removals needed in 2025 to achieve probability. So a slight shuffling of the data here. You have these four things that the TC is going to be tasked with. And to not belabor this too much, because I think now Tony fell asleep, or he may have had a stroke. It could, or honestly, a mix of both. Let's go into a little bit of final thoughts, because we've had the motions survive. We've explained the bad actors. We have a thank you for the states who did vote on behalf of the resource and did stand up for the resource. And maybe we end on a positive note, Tony, with a couple thank yous to those parties. But now December becomes in our horizon. You know, that's our shining star. That's where action needs to happen. We are going to go through all the same processes we always do to support you guys, to give you guys the resources, to make your voice heard, to participate. And our stance has not changed at all. We're not anti-harvest. We're not anti-commercial. We're not anti-fishing. We're none of these things. We are a resource-forward organization, and we are going to give people the resources they need to speak up on behalf of the resource, so that, like I talked about in my public comment related to ASMFC's supposed creed, abundant fisheries benefit all of us, whether you serve them up on a table for someone else, like whether you like to keep your own, or like whether you just want to experience them and put them back. And so we get to the end of this meeting. Tony, any final takeaways? And I think maybe we just end. I'd love to hear Nick's final takeaway and what his thought is going forward into December. We'll keep it pretty brief so people can digest all of this. And then let's give our gold stars, kind of like it's a hockey game. Nick's a big hockey guy. I know we got a lot of hockey guys in our association. Maybe we give out our stars of the game here, you know, some people who really showed up in a major way.
So my biggest takeaway, I think, from this is how important it is to be informed, one, and how important it is to be at this meetings. Although today we obviously didn't get to speak and give our comment. I had a comment prepared too. Granted, you know, I look at this with a completely different perspective. So my voice is lends itself differently. However, it made me realize how important each voice is, whether it's as a rec angler saying, you know, I love to experience this fishery. It's important to me, whether it's an out of stater saying, you know, I only make one or two trips a year, but they all have weight. They're all important. So I think after seeing how the meeting was conducted and hearing the people that spoke at the beginning, how important it is to be present at this meeting, you know, even though this was a really long one, and it was a lot for me personally to digest and understand, I got the gist of it, and it just made me realize how important it is to show up. And it, for me personally, it, I wouldn't have done anything else with this time. I was happy to get to be here and hear all of this. And I feel more in the fight now than, you know, I ever have been in the past outside of doing the advocate work that I've done for you guys and simply enjoying the resource. So my biggest takeaway is how important it is to just show up for this kind of stuff and be prepared to speak. I don't know what the outcome is going to be from it, but at the very least, I hope they make some kind of action so that 2025, there's something in place to help protect what little fish we have left.
You know, I talked about it. Many people already feel this way, but we talked about trust in the board. And like you said, we didn't hit gold here. This isn't like some major action and striped bass are magically saved and we have no clue where the spawns are going. But that's how a board gains faith with its constituents that it represents, is by progressive action. So maybe this isn't everything we'd like to see. And I know there's some voices who want to see even more extreme response to the current data, and justifiably so, they're allowed to feel that way. But seeing some sort of progress going into December, we see some major action and reductions that start to lead us forward. Again, things aren't safe, but you go, okay, maybe these people are acting on behalf of the resource, and that's how they start to gain public faith back. So I love your sentiment.
Yeah, or at the very least, you know that they're hearing what you're saying, right? So like the general sentiment from the public filters in, and you know, even though it was super narrow, you 100%. At least feel a little bit like, okay, they're hearing this, like they read our letter. They know a lot of people have eyes on this, and at least they move to do something in December.
Tony, why don't you take us across the finish line again, maybe a couple gold stars and then quick outlook to December, knowing that, you know, podcasts and content galore, blogs, social, there's a lot to come out of this.
Yeah. I mean, the states that get the gold stars are Maine. New Hampshire gets half a gold star because they've actually voted bad on one of the motions that, you know, it was one of the ones that like gave commercials a free pass. I'll talk to them and see what their thinking was. That was kind of a shock. But the ones who held strong and brought up the ties were Maine, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island. Generally, you know, pushed forward in the right direction. And I've kind of brought to the surface the commissioners that really spoke up and prepared the motions, and at least today didn't turn out as a disaster. So there's the list of, you know, game balls, right? The thing that I would like to tell the community is this. Like, I don't know how many times we can come back to the well with y'all. I really don't. You surprise me every time. And I'm going to give you a heads up. We're going to come back one more time. And we're going to ask you to participate in this. And we're going to figure out if there's going to be a virtual hearing. If there's, you know, we don't know the day. We don't know when this meeting is going to be. We don't know if there's going to be some kind of outreach, you know, opportunity for, we don't know. But we're going to need you. We're going to need you in December. because your voice needs to be heard.
As an advocate, I don't speak for everybody, but yeah, I'm on the other side of that, right? Like, I answer the calls when you guys ring, and I think I speak for most people when I say that you could dip into the well as much as is needed. You know, from the different communities that I've been in the East Coast, and the sentiment I've heard that people are willing to fight and want to fight. The thing is sometimes how. A lot of people don't know how. They have the passion to do it, but they don't know how to get involved. So you call on people as much as is needed when these issues come up, because people are excited. People want to fight. People love this resource. And I think we got a little taste for that doing the whole letter, right? The outpouring of support was huge. So
5 days, 1,600 individuals, and over 200 businesses, 5 days. Three of those days were a holiday weekend, if I remember correctly, if not just a regular weekend. So,
well, y'all, I'll tell you what, they make us proud, Nick. You know, from our perspective, is from the inside looking out. And I guess to clarify my concerns, we have a lot of respect for our advocates and this conservation community. And I just want them to know that it matters. And we're doing everything we can to make sure that it matters. And I just, you know, there is advocate fatigue. But you know, to all the advocates out there, we're getting close to the end. We're running out of time. We don't have a lot of options. So we're going to pull this apart, folks. The technical committee and the stock assessment subcommittee, better known as the SAS, will meet. They will perform the tasks that Cody listed, that the board asked them to. And hopefully this will have a little bit more direction than this meeting had. But when I look back at this fight from the very inception of the Guides Association, I know it doesn't feel like it, but we're winning. Yeah, okay, we've lost some battles, but it seems like we're pushing it down the field and down the field, and we have a setback, and then we push it a little bit more. And I just want to leave everyone with the idea that we can win this.